this is Sangeeta Fadke. I'm an artist that works in soft pastels, and you are listening to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing.
Yeah. My name is Abhay Dandekar, and I share conversations with talented and interesting individuals linked to the global Indian and South Asian community. It's informal and informative, adding insights to our evolving cultural expressions, where each person can proudly say, trust me, I know what I'm doing. Hi, everyone. On this episode of Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing, we share a conversation with master pastel artist Sangeeta Fadke. Stay tuned. Once again, thank you for listening and for sharing this with your friends and family, for rating and kindly reviewing it, and for also following along on social media. Whether it's your first episode or it's first up on your weekly playlist, it's very much appreciated and I'm quite grateful. Now, we've chatted with many guests on this show in the past who are using performance and visual art to tell stories. And that's likely because it's where my own mind takes me as a consumer and an enthusiast. As a novice of fine art, though, and especially with having my own family members who are somewhat skilled at creating paintings and drawings, I've actually come to realize that I don't really know if I have a so-called eye for this medium. So in hoping and wanting to learn more and get more comfortable with it, it was great to share a conversation with award-winning artist Sangeeta Fadke. Sangeeta is from New Jersey and a self-taught artist who's been designated as a master pastelist by the Pastel Society of America and the International Association of Pastel Societies. Her style of realism and still life art has a strong focus on contrasts and sharp dramatic presentations of both perfections and imperfections. And Sangeeta's experiences growing up in Chicago as an Indian American, and even her study and brief career in finance, have all informed her professional work. Her presentations and pieces have been showcased in museums, galleries, and private collections across America and globally, and featured in fine art publications across the world. Sangeeta's expressions of hyper-realism and experimentations with color are probably the most striking on first glance, and perhaps the foundation of many more curiosities and questions and emotions as a viewer. So we had a chance to catch up recently to chat about her evolution and journey, about the comfort of having an eye for this medium, about the movement and motion within still life art, and the real storytelling, of course, that's given and received from both sides of the pastel painting. But I started out by asking her to recall her first memory of using art as a mode of expression.
So I always have been drawing, like since I was very little. This is what I gravitated towards. This is what I spent most of my time doing. But my memory, because those memories I have from when I was little, those are my parents' memories that they would share.
Sure.
You were drawing all the time. You were doing this all the time. But my first memory of my own was actually on a trip, my first trip that I remember going to India when I was about 7 years old. And my dad and mom got me this sketchbook and maybe three colors. There wasn't a lot. It was just a sketchbook and three colors. And we were there, we were in India for 2 weeks. We traveled around parts of Maharashtra. And I used the sketchbook as almost like a diary for myself. So when we were on trains, when we were traveling, when we were visiting whatever family we were visiting and of temples and things like that, I had it with me the whole time. And every single page is full. And I still have it because my parents saved everything that I ever created. And it's nice to, you know, go back as an adult and look through it and see like where this all started. And I just remember that was the first time that I used art as a way to express like thoughts of my own and things that I was feeling and thinking. And then I continued to do that even when I was back in the U.S. and I would do it even to this day, like for the rest of my life. That's kind of what my diaries aren't always written, but more art.
Right, right. Well, and it's, you know, kind of like a source of chronicling and comfort, and the sketch pad can sort of be your companion and your best friend through these journeys in life. And I'm curious, you're someone who's evolved to express art, especially as being self-taught. And so, you know, with that story of that sketchbook being sort of your companion during this trip and kind of also how this evolved for your parents' memories as well. Was this a process, especially being self-taught, that kind of required a lot of refinement to best understand what defined excellence for you? Like, how did that idea of like, well, I'm teaching myself, but here's how I know that there is some value to this or some excellence to what I'm doing?
So I think the main thing for me was it started off as a way to just express myself. And yeah. As I started doing it more and more, I started to realize like, wow, this is something that I'm good at, that I'm not only just love, but I feel like I'm getting better. And that was just from practice and practice and practice. And I always tell everyone, when we were younger and traveling or wherever, we didn't have anything to do in the car. We didn't have iPads. We didn't have anything. And that's what really taught me how to really observe things. And if you've seen my art, you know that I love realism and I love really getting in there and getting every last little detail. And that just honestly comes from learning how to observe and appreciate things around me. Sometimes out of boredom, it started maybe initially out of boredom, just watching, and then ultimately led into, oh my gosh, I love this. I love seeing all these little details. And especially like if you've ever been in a car when it's raining and you're watching those drops fall down on your windshield, that became something almost magical to me. So I'm just sitting there watching these drops falling down and watching how they move and how they're observing them and realizing they're so different, right? Like you think, oh, there's a generic water drop in our mind that we will all see, but this is something totally different. This is, every single drop has its own unique thing. And that's just from me observing. And that's kind of how I went through my life, is really observing things. And even when I'm having conversations with people, if I'm face to face with them, it became a really hard habit to break. And to this day, I have a hard time doing it, where if I'm talking to someone, I'm looking at you, in my mind, I'm also painting you. And I'm also seeing all those things that if you were right in front of me, and if I had my tools, like my pastels and my paper, I see the shadows, I see everything. And sometimes I get so caught up in it that I lose focus of what I'm actually, supposed to be focusing on. And so that all just comes from, observing a lot.
Well, and it's funny because it must mean that it's really, really dynamic and beautiful for you to actually look at any object, because your power of observing is so, so strong. Was that kind of curated because you've been able to kind of focus really well? Like, I feel like from boredom and from like actually like having that open time and space comes like this idea of curiosity and this focus on being able to sort of really, really pay attention to very, very minute details and see that kind of beauty in it. In teaching yourself how to now express that, was there a point where you were like, hey, there's this sort of click that happens or this aha moment that says, hey, yes, I can actually like share this?
There definitely is. And it was, I think for me in middle school is when I started to realize, what I'm doing might be of interest to other people. Because it was all for myself, right? All the art and everything I did was for myself. And I was almost a little too shy to share it with the world because it felt so deeply personal to me. Because like I said, these were almost my diaries. And, for me, it was hard to take that personal story out of the art. And I don't ever want to do that. I want to bring people in. But when I was young, it was a really scary thing to jump into, I'm going to now share this. And can they feel what I was feeling? Do they know what I was thinking? Can they look at this and know those deep, intimate thoughts that I have? But I started to slowly, not very publicly, but with friends and family friends, they come to our house and they see the art, and then I got more comfortable sharing it. So then I started sharing it more and more and more, and the reactions I had made me want to create more, because I felt like it created connections with people that I didn't know was even there by sharing the art. And so then I found it amazing to share, and I wasn't as afraid to share my art. And even to this day, I do still, if there's something that's incredibly maybe challenging or something really hard in my life that I put onto paper and I share with the world, I do feel that a little bit sense of protection. But then I know that I do want to share this. I do, and I'm not afraid to do it. So then I go ahead.
I'm actually curious about one thing is, people always talk about this expression of having an eye for art. And when you think about your experience, is there in a way a difference between having the eye of an artist and having an eye for art?
Well, I think that, you know, there's so many different styles of art, right? My art is realistic, but when you go and see other art, there's all different types of art. And I think that when people are honest with how they want to share and portray their art, anyone can do it. You know what I mean? Yeah. Even if it's, I've had exhibitions where people will come and praise and come and say such kind and amazing and heartfelt things to me that I will remember for the rest of my life. And there are people that don't get it. You know, they don't get it. And it's so subjective. It's such a subjective thing. And I think for me, when I was first starting out professionally in the art world, my entry into this whole entire industry was through art competitions. And so I entered, there's competitions worldwide in all different categories, in different medium, different genres. And I entered competitions. And when you do that, you're allowing people to express their honest opinion of your art, whether they like it, whether they don't.
Right.
You know, even just in galleries, when your art is up there and there's a big opening reception, you can hear people talking about your art. And it's wonderful, and it's also pretty scary. So
Right. And you know, it's so art, music, any form of expression that is now subject to the audience or subject to a listener, subject to a beholder. Mm-hmm. There is that incredible non-objective judgment. And unlike anything else, right? You're a professional competitive swimmer. You either swim faster or not. And in this way, is that something you have to grow into, knowing that the measurement of this is different for every single person?
Yes, and it's hard. It's a really hard thing to grow into, especially I think depending on the type of person you are. Like today, at this point in my life, I feel so proud of what I've done and I feel confident in what I've done. So if somebody is to say something negative, it doesn't feel as personal to me as it did in the past.
Sure.
So when I first started entering these competitions, it stung a lot. If you don't get in or you hear something negative about it. And the first year that I started this professionally, I entered 40 art competitions. Like, I just went for it. I went
all in.
So many. And I didn't get accepted into all of them. And the funny thing is, some of the shows that my work was declined from, I entered the same piece in another show. This happened twice in my career where I entered the same piece that was declined from one show and ended up winning best of show at another show. So I always tell like anyone new coming in, this is so subjective. Some of the competitions I've been to have one juror for the show exhibition and one juror for awards. That's one person's opinion. So if you let that one person's opinion dictate like what you do moving forward, then you don't get the opportunity to keep going, you know? So it was hard. It was really hard though.
Yeah, I can imagine. And in that same line of thinking, for you as someone thinking about now, like how something will be judged or how something will be viewed, or not for that matter, right? Just creating it because it means something to you. I'm always so curious about this piece, which is, how do you know when one of your pieces is actually complete?
Oh, that's hard. That's a hard question, because for me, I've always loved to tell stories. And in my mind, I can get the story. When I try to put it on paper, it's not as successful. But when I use, like, meaning like in words. But when I try to do it with visuals, with art, that's when it all comes together. So there's almost like this beginning, middle, and end. And so as I'm working on this piece, the story is evolving in my mind and it's coming out on this paper, and I can feel when it's coming to an end. I can feel it. And there's no clear explanation of where I can say, oh, this is a moment when it's done, but it's just a feeling that I have that this is exactly how I wanted to portray what was in my mind. And I feel good about it and it's ready to go.
Right. As that feeling kind of comes, that must be really liberating, right? That you've got this thing out there, it's ready to go. and to some degree, the gratification is now yet to come. Do you ever go back and you're like, well, yeah, I'm not sure how I felt about that. Like, I felt like that at the moment, but, you know, I'm looking back at it, especially someone who's so attentive to details. Do you go back and you say, well, boy, I could have done that a little differently, or I'd like to correct this and that? How much of that goes on for you?
So when I first started introducing, so I paint water drops on still life, like fruits and vegetables, flowers, things like that. When I first started doing the water drops, I was so excited because I was like, wow, this is turning out so much like I imagined in my mind, and it's helping tell the story that I want to tell. And so I started doing it, but there's like a learning curve, as there is with anything. So when I look back at some of those earlier pieces, I've been painting water drops now for, I want to say, like 15 years. But when I go back to that like first piece, sometimes I'm like, oh, wow, that was me learning. And it is kind of hard. Like, I have some of those pieces at my house. And when people come to visit and they're like, oh, these water drops are so great, in my mind, I'm thinking, I wish I could go back and fix that. But I hesitate to do that because I feel like it shows the growth. And it shows, you know, when you devote yourself to something and when you practice and put yourself in that practice environment every day, look how much you can accomplish. And so that's the reason I don't necessarily go back and go over it and do what I can do now versus what I could do when I first started.
Yeah, no, that's great. And I imagine that it's all part of the kind of iterative process with this, especially adding more layers as you grow as an artist. You're listening to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing. After a quick break, we'll come back to our conversation with artist Sangeeta Farke. Stay tuned. Every story told is a lesson learned, and every lesson learned is a story waiting to be told. I'm Abhay Dandekar, and I share conversations with global Indians and South Asians so everyone can say, trust me, I know what I'm doing. New episodes weekly, wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Krish Ashok, author of Masala Lab, The Science of Indian Cooking, and you're listening to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing.
Hello, everyone. My name is Tim France.
Hey, this is Samir Gadia.
Hi, my name is Richa Morjani, and you're listening to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing with Abhay Dandekar.
Welcome back to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing. Let's rejoin our conversation now with master pastel artist Sangeeta Farke.
You mentioned your work is thematically based in realism, and that's been the genre that, or at least the style that you're working with. How'd you gravitate towards that style? Did this kind of, as you mentioned, kind of come naturally for you, or did it sort of fit particularly with the aesthetic that you were looking for, and of course with the medium that you're working with?
So I've always gravitated towards realism. I've always loved it, admired it, felt connected to it. And when I was working in those journals when I was young, I was doing a lot of portraits. And that's where I always say I do a lot of still life work right now, but I started in portraits. And everything that I was doing was in portraits in the beginning. And it was really funny because when I first started, I used to draw people without faces. I would draw their hair, their clothes, every other detail, everything, and I would leave out the face because I was so scared to get it wrong. And the few times that I tried it, I was like, this is so off. Like, this doesn't, I can do everything else so easily, and the face is so hard. And so I have journals or sketchbooks and sketchbooks filled with faceless figures. And then one day I was like, I can't do this. I have to work towards this. And so I practiced and it was horrible in the beginning. The proportions were off. I had to learn basic anatomy. I had to learn a lot, and not really even through books, but just through observation, right? I had to watch and see, what are the proportions? Why is this wrong? And I think a lot of artists, when they're first starting, might tell you, you might see like little foreheads. You don't realize how big the forehead actually is until you start paying attention. You have these ideas in your mind, and they're not always accurate when you go to put them on paper. And so I had to learn all of that. first. And so once I got into portraiture, I started realizing how much I loved like every tiny little lash, every little like detail in the skin. And that's where I think my love for realism first started, with drawing people and learning how to draw people. And then I just started evolving from there to also include still life and other genres.
You've been designated as a master pastelist. And I'm curious how this motivates you, like how that statement, right, motivates you now, and especially in this idea of continuing to sort of like perfect the craft, to evolve as an artist. What does that designation maybe mean or not mean for that matter?
So when I got that designation, this was in the time when I was first starting my career, and I was entering all these juried art exhibitions. For me, it sort of felt like, wow, I cannot believe that my fellow colleagues that have been painting for, at that time, so many more years than me are recognizing me in this industry. It meant the world to me that, because when you go to the shows, you meet other professional artists that are also there, some of them who have been in the industry for a really long time, and I admire and love their art. And some of these same artists are now giving me that master designation, and at that time, it didn't really feel real. It felt like, wow, I can't believe that this is happening and that people are responding to my art the way you always hope that they will, right?
Sure.
Like when I put my art out there, I hope people understand it or feel any sort of connection to it. And when that happens, it's such a great feeling, and it brings you, or at least for me, it makes me feel motivated to want to create more, to create more connections with people that are viewing my art. And I think right now, especially, that is what motivates me to create art, is to have an opportunity to connect with somebody, to connect with anybody. And I think that's what I love most about sharing my art.
You mentioned that the connection also happens through storytelling. And because those stories, for the most, especially to a novice like me, because your subjects are stills or portraits, and I'm just curious, how does this affect storytelling, but particularly from a sense of motion and pace, and especially when precision is sort of like this still snapshot, and yet storytelling, of course, involves oftentimes a lot of kind of rhythm and acceleration and, you know, sort of a pace of things. How do you maybe merge those two aspects together?
So it's funny, a few years ago, there was an article about still life art. And one of the writers that featured me in this article, the title of it was Anything But Still. And then when you talked about motion, it made me think of that, because though I am creating a still painting, and my, especially with the fruits and vegetables and things like that, it is a very still image right in front of you. What I'm hoping, and I hope to do this by the way I include light in my artwork, and I hope that when people see the shadows and the highlights and things in my art, in these still images, they're compelled to feel something beyond just that still image. And especially so, when I was in high school, I had a creative writing class that I took. I remember our creative writing teacher had written something on the chalkboard, and he said, I want you guys to write a poem relating to this one sentence. And the sentence was, light becomes lighter when held up to darkness. And he wanted us to write a poem using that phrase. And I remember sitting there thinking about it for a really long time. Light becomes lighter when held up to darkness. And I thought, I have always loved heavy contrast in my art. And part of the reason why, so if you look at my art, you'll see so much darkness. There's so much darkness in my art. Most of my backgrounds are nearly black, really, really dark background. And for me, it comes so much to do with that quote, with light becomes lighter when held up to darkness. I'm trying to bring this image of these very, like a single spotlight lit thing, up into focus and make them prominent and the main, sort of the main characters in these pieces.
Right.
And then as the object goes into the background, it almost disappears, like the shadows disappear into this darkness. And for me, it kind of brings along like curiosity and mystery in these images.
and a lot of motion, right? Because, like, you know, that contrast, that sort of differential between light and dark, actually, as you mentioned pretty aptly, right, can really note that motion, even though it's anything but still, as that one writer was talking about. I want to pivot to one thing real quick. You grew up as an Indian American in a Marathi household. And does any of this background bleed into your expression? Certainly, like, into your evolution, of course, is how this came about, whether it's the diary of a sketchbook in India or, you know, your own family upbringing. But does any of this cultural background actually come through in some of your expression at all?
I definitely think it does. It might not be in the most obvious way, but for me, when I think of, like, my parents and some of the things that I visual, because everything for me was always very visual. So when I looked around our house, or if I opened my mom's closet, it was colorful. It wasn't neutral. There was no, like, neutral palettes in our house. Everything was really colorful. And there was always, like, gold or silver embroidery and beads and things. And when light catches it, like, when I just always think about my mom's closet when you have the light on it, everything was sparkling, right? It was really a lot. That's when I sort of fell in love with this whole idea of bold color.
Mm.
That's what I try to carry over into my art, is these bold images of heavy contrast and extremely colorful. I have been in galleries in Santa Fe for some time, and always when I was approached, the first thing they would say to me is, we came to you because our gallery needs more color. We're looking for color. And I definitely can root that right back to my parents and, you know, the culture that they bring from the clothing and even the decoration and stuff that was in our home.
Yeah, I mean, so visually stunning, so much of our imagery and the things that come with that. Of course, you know, stunning in different ways, perhaps, is the world of finance. And you've had some experience there as well. But I mean, in studying finance and then kind of choosing to devote your time and energy to art, this idea of kind of finding someone's calling, right? Was this, especially when you're going through kind of studying as a finance major or even like thinking about that as a profession, was this a sort of serendipitous event that became kind of an aha pivot? Or was it more of a slow burn that over time finally saw more and more air and oxygen and kind of, you know, made its way through?
So if you had asked me that question in high school, I would have said, I'm going to be working in finance.
Right.
And I don't think, I didn't even know that being a professional artist was ever an option. And it's not that I didn't love art and that I wasn't passionate about art, because I was. I spent so much of my time doing just that when I was in high school. It was more this idea of higher education, to be able to provide for yourself and your family after graduation, right? Like, earn a living. And my parents have always been my biggest supporters, always, about art and everything. But none of us, including myself, believed that art could be a legitimate career.
Right.
So it didn't cross my mind. When I was in college, I went to the University of Illinois in Urbana-Champaign.
Yeah.
And I love math, and so I chose finance. I was like, okay, I'm going to go get a finance degree. I really love math. Let's see how this goes. So the 4 years that I was there, I did almost no art. Mm. And it was that 4 years, that was the first time in my life ever where the weeks would pass and I wouldn't do anything art related.
Sure.
And I started to lose myself, to be quite honest. That was the first time I felt like I didn't know what I was doing in my life. Mm. And I couldn't pinpoint it to meet the lack of art until later on when I reflected. But in that time, if you had asked me what's wrong, I wouldn't have known. I didn't realize it was me not being able to have that creative outlet and being able to do what I was passionate about and what I loved. Did I love finance? No, I didn't. Did I think I was good at it at the time? Yeah. I was like, okay, I understand this. I'm doing great in it. I'm going to go get a finance degree and work that.
Yeah.
So then I got the job in finance and started working in corporate America. And I don't think I've ever been more miserable in my whole entire life. Mm. And it was being that miserable day after day that made me reflect on what would I need to actually be happy? What would I need to feel like my life, I'm doing something productive here and I'm contributing in any way and being honest. I felt like I wasn't even being an honest version of myself when I was in this finance role. It felt like I was putting on an act. Like I was just doing it every day, but it wasn't really me.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because there's always this stereotypical tagline that's put in front of the word, often put in front of the word artist, that they're starving or they're struggling. You don't hear that very often when people talk about people in finance, that, you know, struggling finance person, whatnot. And in a way, like that absence and what that maybe taught you, was that revealing about this stereotype? Because of course, I'm sure that many struggle with this juxtaposition of like, well, here's something I love doing, but is it sustainable for me kind of when it comes to living? And can I make a living out of it? And they ask that question quite a bit. I mean, does that idea, like, you know, how do you reflect back on that now, that this notion of surviving out there as an artist versus, hey, being able to kind of like get those years back, particularly when you talk about the absence of what it left you with?
So I think that the whole starving artist concept came about because if you really want to do this, if you want art or anything that you're passionate about to be your actual career, you have to work 10 times harder, in my experience, than what I did to get, you know, into my finance role. In comparison, I worked 10 times harder because I wanted it so bad. And I think people who are that passionate, you can't kind of want it, because this is a hard industry to break into. You know, if you want to be represented by a gallery, finding that gallery, it's not easy at first, right? There's a lot of, whereas if you graduate from college with a degree in finance or something else, there might be a more clear path on how you're going to make your income, right?
Sure.
Versus with art, you have to, there wasn't anyone that I could look to say, oh, I'm going to follow that person's path because that's how they got their career. It was more, I have to figure this out on my own.
Yeah, there's not a whole lot of art gallery recruiters on campus.
there's absolutely not. And I think that's sort of the scary part of it, right? Is that how do I go about this? And you have to figure out, so for me with art, there was a pivot that I took initially before I landed the galleries was teaching in art. And I started teaching in art. I started teaching workshops all over the United States and realized, wow, you can make a whole living just doing that, right? And then I got into the galleries and it was, I get to sell my art now.
You're listening to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing. Let's take a quick break and come back shortly to our conversation with Sangeeta Farke. Stay tuned. Conversation. It's the antidote to apathy and the catalyst for relationships. I'm Abhay Dandekar, and I share conversations with global Indians and South Asians so everyone can say, trust me, I know what I'm doing. New episodes weekly, wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Hi, this is Vidya Balan, and you're listening to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing.
Hi, guys. I'm Indra Nui.
Hi, I'm Prakash Janakaraman.
Hi, this is Madhuri Dixit, and you're listening to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing with Abhay Dandekar.
Hi there. I'm Abhay Dandekar, and you're listening to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing. Let's rejoin our conversation now with master pastel artist Sangeeta Farke.
You know, are there intersections that people don't think of? Like you mentioned, you actually really loved math, and you studied finance. Are there intersections that have made you realize that your time in studying math and finance have actually made you a better artist? Or for that matter, like your skills and your eye and your aesthetics and that aesthetic feel as an artist actually made you really love math and at least temporarily be able to succeed in finance?
I don't regret any part of me going through the finance route. even when I think back to those years that I was miserable, I'm happy that it happened because it made me work that much harder to get out of that and push for something that I actually wanted. And it may, if I didn't have that, I think I would have still pushed, but maybe not to that level, you know, just because I wanted that so bad. Also, when I first started creating these still life images, which is what ultimately landed the gallery representation, there was so much symmetry in my art. Everything was really symmetrical. And I do believe a lot of that came from my love of math and numbers and things like that. And so there is part of me that's still there. And I also, on a totally separate note, when I do talk to other professional artists, sometimes they do struggle with the business side of dealing with your running your own business, right? When you're, it's on you, you're self-employed, it's your own business. I do run into a lot of artists that are seeking advice on how to manage that side of it, which I did learn a lot through the degree that I pursued.
Yeah. And I mean, unlike being in finance or being in a profession in corporate America, those areas, of course, you can much, or it's much easier perhaps to measure success. And as an artist, for you, how do you measure your own success? How do you even define that, if you will?
So it's evolved. What that means to me has evolved through the years. If you ask me today, right now, how I measure success, I think my goal has shifted a lot. And right now, my goal has been to share my art and feel a connection with somebody, whether it's the person who purchases my art, somebody walking by that just sees my art. I had a neighbor that saw my art on Instagram or some social media platform and was like, I had no idea you did this. Could I come see your artwork? And I was like, absolutely. So I had absolutely no intent of her purchasing any. Like, that wasn't what she came in for. I just thought she was coming to look at art. So she, and I had art around my house, and she was walking around, and she just stopped in front of this piece that I made. It was an orchid. It was an orchid flower, and it was her and her daughter that came to see the work. And her daughter was older, like graduated college, and they both are standing in front of this orchid painting for a solid 3 minutes where no one's saying anything.
Yeah.
She said, I'd like to purchase this painting. And I was like, well, you don't have to buy anything today. She's like, no, I absolutely want to purchase this painting. And her daughter said, do you mind if I share the story with her? And the mother said, of course. And her daughter told me that years ago, her father had unexpectedly passed away. When her mother and father first met on their very first date, he got her an orchid as a gift. And then every Valentine's Day that they were married, and I think they were married for 29 years, he got her a orchid for Valentine's Day. And on the first year that he passed away and Valentine's Day came around, an orchid was delivered. And it turns out it was from her son, who now continues the tradition after his father's passing.
Right.
And she told me, when I came to your house and I saw that orchid, I believed that there was some connection that brought me to you. And when I see that painting, she said, when I see that painting hanging in my house, it makes me think of him, it makes me think of you, and I feel like we're all connected in some way. And
amazing.
To me, that now just like that will stick with me for the rest of my life. Like, I will never forget her words. And I now every Valentine's just say Happy Valentine's Day to her because I know what that holiday means to her. And I know that my painting is now part of her story and their story and their family story. And to me, that is how I define success at where I am right now in my career.
I can't think of a more kind of gratifying story than that. You know, whether you're in art or for that matter, in any profession, vocation, type of expression where you're connecting with someone else. And in thinking about that, I also can't think of a more singular practice, right? A space of solitude, reflection, kind of deeply individual. Art and painting, those activities are incredibly individual when it comes to the expression. But it sounds like also you found so much connection with peers and with community and in sort of like collaborating and building with other artists. You know, tell me a little bit about how that's felt, you know, especially finding kind of peace and power in both the solitude of the art, but also the collective expression.
Yeah, I think that for me, it took me a while to realize that I get so excited and I want to create more and more and more when I do have that connection with people. And so I always am constantly finding ways to do that. Last summer, I started this series. So I didn't know that this would happen, but we have this app, I think it's called like Nextdoor, and it's basically like a neighborhood app. And I just randomly posted on there one day, it was springtime, and I said, if anyone in the neighborhood has flowers that I could paint, just let me know. Well, hundreds of people later, everyone just started texting me, come over, I have this flower, I have things blooming in my garden. And so I started going all over my county and meeting with all these different people, and they would like cut flowers from their garden, give it to me. They would cut fruits, and that's like just so many things. And I got to meet these people. That was the best part for me, that I got to meet these people. I got to hear they shared stories about their lives, their gardens, really deeply personal, beautiful stories. And so when I took some of those things and went back home and painted them, that's in my mind. And some of these stories, like, the one I created a painting of figs after I visited one of my neighbor's houses, and she told me that when she first moved into her home when she was in her 20s and she had just gotten married, and her dad, as a housewarming gift, got a fig tree, like it was just a little stick, and he planted it in her backyard. Fast forward now, I want to say like almost 40 years later, her father has passed away, and her fig tree is just gigantic. And when I came, it was full, just full of figs. And she gave me some of those figs. And, you know, it's those stories, like those life stories of this tree is like, in her mind, she was like, it's my dad living on. Like, he lives here in this tree because he planted it for her. And she gave me those figs. And how lucky am I that I now get to take these figs and create something and add my story into their stories, and it feels so interconnected. And I could go on and on about the things that people told me and shared with me when this happened. And to this day, I have friendships that I've formed with people that will text me, oh, this tree's flowering, come and see it now. And it's really like, you know, it's amazing. And it makes me feel like my art is part of something bigger. It gives me purpose into, wow, this is more, it's not just about me. This isn't about me and what I want to create, but maybe something more collective. And that makes me excited, and that makes me feel good about creating the art that I'm creating.
Well, and especially when you see that with both people you know, you love, strangers, and then thinking about the idea that you're part of this larger collective, guilds that are out there that are also, you know, sharing in the experience as other peers do. Do you find, therefore, art and the expression as you create and paint, do you find it to be kind of a place of sanctuary or retreat? Or is it more of an open free space, like a party and a picnic? Or is it all of those things?
It's all of those. I was about to say it's all of those things and more.
Yeah.
When I paint, I can't even think of another way to describe the feeling. There's nothing similar that I can say, oh, it feels just like this when I'm painting. All I can say is it feels like I've left Earth almost. Like I've left this part of my life that I know and go into this whole different space.
Right.
And that's where you can get lost in that world, right? You can get lost with time. Like time passes, like you can't believe. And I feel like that feeling is such a great and amazing feeling, not to escape life. It's not that I'm trying to escape this world, but to get into this place of almost imagination and excitement, and that I can take things in my head that I can't speak about or that I can't write about, but that I can draw about. That's why I love it so much. And it is all those different things. Sometimes it's a party. Sometimes it's a place of sadness. Sometimes it's a place of imagination, and it's all of those things.
I feel like I could probably talk to you for another hour about all this, but I'll try and see if I can get you out of here on this thought. When people, I mean, you're the spectrum of emotions, whether it's for you, whether it's for others who are experiencing your art, you know, starting out from a sketch pad, moving to pastels, and now as this has grown and evolved for you on this journey, for someone who might be experiencing your art for the very first time, and they're maybe seeing one of your pieces, how do you hope they feel? And then on top of that, what questions do you hope they're asking?
The goal for me every time I create art is for someone to feel anything. So when you walk by, it either makes you think of someone that you know, or a time in your life, or especially with my still life, if you're looking at maybe fruits or vegetables, sometimes a certain smell, if you smell something and it reminds you of home or reminds you of some experience in your life, that even though it's a painting, that you still feel all those things, like all of our senses are involved in this. It's not just visual, but that it makes you think of a memory. Maybe you can smell something. Maybe you can even taste something. That would be like the ultimate dream for anyone coming to see my art.
Do you hope they're also asking any questions to themselves? Or for that matter, if you weren't there, what questions do you hope they're asking of you?
I always wonder, when someone's walking by, do they think about not only the story of the art piece, but maybe what was the artist thinking? What was going on in their life at that time? Because I know that when I'm going in galleries and looking at other people's art, it's the first thing that I think about when I see something that grabs my attention. I always wonder about the artist. I wonder if they were having something really amazing happening in their life. Were they going through something tragic? Were they going through something new and hopeful? You know, and I don't know if other people do that when they walk by, but maybe one day I'll find out.
Well, Sangeeta, I know more and more people are appreciating and asking those questions and hopefully building that much more curiosity and wonder about all the things that you're creating. Thank you so, so much for joining us today. This was really a true treat hosting you for a conversation, and I hope we can visit with you again down the road.
Thank you so much for inviting me to be here. It was so great to speak about a little bit about my art and my journey so far. So thank you.
Thanks so much again, Sangeeta. And please check out more about her and her art at sangeetafarke.com. A big thank you for rating and reviewing and passing the word along to your friends and family about Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing. Also a big shout out to Ajit Deshmukh for helping with the connection. And a huge shout out to, of course, Mutsati. Till next time, I'm Abhay Dandekar.